This is the Gas House Gang on 104.1 FM KMOX.
Sponsored by Saligi Heating and Cooling, a Daikin Comfort dealer. And by Overhead Door Company of St. Louis, Chesterfield Fence and Deck, and Budweiser.
Now, the Gas House Gang on KMOX.
The Pirates are down to their last strike. The pitch by Swanson. A swing and a miss for a Redbird winner. A sweeper strikes out O'Neill Cruz, and this ballgame has come to an end. The Cardinals outlast the Pirates to win the first two games in the series, 4-2 last night and 11-7 tonight.
Yeah, the Cardinals have come alive here in Pittsburgh. They've won back-to-back games. They play tonight at 5:40, go for a series win. They're taking on the Dodgers this weekend with Bernie Miklas and Chris Ranji. I'm Tom Ackerman. Our producers are Matt Pajeski and Frank Ladd. It is a team here operating the Gas House Gang. Research has been done. Audio has been played. We are ready for an hour. That's all we get. 55 minutes to go here on the show. I was listening to the Chris and Amy show on the way back. I was just out grabbing something to eat, came back, and I heard you guys talking about downtown and Cardinals tickets being affordable, and I agree, and I'm here to tell you, they're selling some tickets this weekend. Now, it's not going to be sold out against the Dodgers, but, Ranj, I think they're going to have, from what I understand, at a floor of 30,000 per game and probably well into the 30s, and that's even with some cooler temperatures. I call that playoff weather.
Well, this is perfect for baseball. It's the 95 plus that's not.
Yeah.
That's terrible. But you can. I mean, as of right now, just checked, Friday night, you can see Shohei Ohtani and the Cardinals, you know, going up against the Cardinals, $25 tickets. I know that's not affordable for everybody, but it's these days, it is a very cheap ticket to watch a superstar and to watch your Cardinals play, too.
And Bernie Miklas, I guarantee you that the Cardinals players will feed off of that. They love that stuff. And they were told after opening day by Ollie Marmol and everybody else who witnessed that big crowd, this is what it can be like. And I think that they probably have that in the back of their mind, that someday we'll be back to that.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to make your mark, or if you at least want to kind of send a message to the baseball world, including the other teams, the media, so on and so forth, you know, you want to win a series from the Dodgers. And that's very, very difficult to do. But the Cardinals are very, very good playing the underdog role. They really are. You know, every time I start to waver a little bit, you know, the four-game losing streak was bad. And I was thinking, well, you know, they're really not that good. And, you know, we really weren't expecting much and blah, blah, blah. Then they kind of just rise up and, you know, land some more punches. And then you're like, no, this team's kind of different. They're a little different in the best possible way. So I can't wait for that matchup. I can't wait.
And you know what? We talked about this a little bit yesterday. I love that they are playing some competitive baseball now. And we talked about the Mariners series. And even though they lost, they got swept, they were still in all of those games. It's not like they got curb stomped or anything like that. But I don't think I'm changing my outlook on them. It's just I'm enjoying this while it lasts. And maybe I could be surprised, and many of us could be, if they play like this all season long and we're sitting in the middle of September and they're in the conversation for a wild card or something. If that happens, awesome. That's great. I'm not expecting that to happen. I'm just enjoying the ride as it happens this year, because I know this is a new era of Cardinals baseball that's just gotten started.
Carlos wants to get us started on the comments on YouTube, wants to know if Victor's home run went into the river last night in Pittsburgh. It did. It went into the Allegheny River, and Vic was a happy man, Bernie, and we've been critical of Vic. This is what we do. We criticize players for what they do between the lines. He has not been able to get barrels on the ball, right? And this time he sure did. I mean, that ball was absolutely stung by Victor Scott II.
Yeah, it was a rocket. Yeah, they you know, they took Ollie Marmol and Brent Brown, they took him out of the lineup Friday, and they just had him work in the cage and work on some stuff. And, they're trying to adjust his swing so he gets some elevation on the ball and he can start hitting some line drives, get the ball in the air a little bit. And maybe that rocket he hit last night is a sign of progress. We'll wait and see. But, you know, Tom, I look at it this way. You know, I don't know that we've been critical of Victor Scott. you know, you are what your statistics say you are. And if your statistics are really, really, really bad, I don't think, you know, citing those statistics means you're ripping a guy. You're just citing the statistics, you know, just the way you would, like for me, example, like, you know, I'm on this little kick where I'm citing the statistics, the offensive statistics for Pedro Páez. You know, and they're better than I thought they would be. It's pretty good, actually. And so I just go where the evidence leads me. You know what I'm saying, man?
Yeah, sure. I mean, when I say critic, I mean we are analyzing what's going on.
And I think we're not being unfair to him.
No, I think we're being critical of the performance. And I think that when you say, as I did, and you guys, I think, all agreed with me, that when Lars Nootbaar joins this outfield, that Nathan Church should be your center fielder, not Richard Scott the second. That is a valid criticism based on the numbers. But he went out and zapped one yesterday and showed that he does have the ability. It's just that consistency that you're looking for in Vic. But that was pretty cool. And the story about, you know, his dad growing up around those parts, and him kind of, you could see the emotion in the interview with Danny Wexelman after the game. It was cool. I liked it.
It was, you know, guys, the one thing I want to throw out at you, you know, there's basically 5 months of baseball to go. So a lot can change, a lot can happen, whatever, you know, ups and downs. But with the pitching problems they have, and as I sit here today, you know, the rotation's really limited. There can be some solid starts, but generally speaking, it's limited. You know, they're still trying to sort out the bullpen. There have been, it's not exactly as dependable as we'd like to see. But the one thing, and I never thought, guys, I'd be saying this, right? Didn't think I'd be saying this. The Cardinals, to win, to have a good year, they're going to have to continue to score runs at the pace they're scoring runs. I mean, the Cardinals, as we sit here today, fellas, they rank eighth in the major leagues in runs per game, and they are sixth in the major league in home runs per game. And they're in the top 10, top 11 in a lot of offensive categories. Yeah, they have some clunkers. Memo, all teams do. That, you know, there are times this season when the Dodgers will look like they've never seen a pitch thrown to them in the batter's box, you know. But this offense has outperformed expectations, and this offense, except for hitting with runners in scoring positions, which is terrible, this offense has actually really prevented this record, which is 3 games over .500. This record would be much, much, much worse without the fact that the Cardinals offense is playing really well, all things considered, and producing a lot of runs relative to expectations.
The home runs are a huge part of this. And that, what did we talk about last year with the offense? They just don't have any power. There was only one team in baseball worse than them at hitting home runs, and it's the team they're playing right now, in the Pirates. And for, it doesn't mean, if you don't hit home runs, it doesn't mean you can't win. It doesn't mean you can't be a playoff team. The Padres were in the playoffs last year, and they were just barely in front of the Cardinals with the power numbers. But if you're not hitting home runs, you better be pitching lights out. You can't be giving up almost anything. Your bullpen better be strong, better have a good closer. You better have a top rotation, a strong rotation, and you better be finding ways to score runs otherwise. So, I mean, as long as this power lasts, and I would hope it continues, because we're going to start to get into the warmer weather here, so you would think it would stand a reason that a lot of that power will stick around here. But as long as they're doing that, they can be a decent offense, because they just weren't doing anything like this last year.
I'm sorry, Tom. What I like about it is they have the best of both worlds. They have the power game going, and they are, based on all of the available stuff you look at to monitor these things, if they're not the best small ball manufacturing type offense in baseball, they're one of the very best. So they are not overly dependent on home runs. They need them, as you said, Rons. They absolutely need to hit home runs. It can't go back to last year where the Cardinals averaged fewer than one home run per game. But on days when the home runs aren't flying, they find they have other ways they can score runs, and that's really kind of cool. Listen, here's the Bernie stat of the day. The Cardinals have scored 22% of their runs this season without getting a base hit on the play that scored the runner. So you know what their big thing is? We got to get the guy to third, get the guy to third, move him over, ground ball, right side, move him to third, bunt him over, whatever. They're confident that once they can get a guy to third base, no matter how they do it, they're going to get him home. And that's basically what has happened. A lot of runs without the benefit of a base hit. I think that's pretty cool myself.
Yeah, they have an on-base machine in J.J. Weatherholt leading off for them, and Herrera second. Herrera walked three times yesterday and scored three runs. There's a perfect example right there of the run producing they're capable of with the middle of the order, Burleson, Walker, and Gorman. Burleson has 20 RBIs this season. Walker has 19, and here comes Nolan Gorman. He has 18. He hit a home run yesterday, a three-run shot. A solo shot, but he drove in three on the day, and the Cardinals won that ball game 11-7. Another thing to talk about is pitching. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we'll discuss what happened last night with Kyle Leahy going 5 1/3, but it was even better than that when you look at the line that he was able to produce, but mostly that he was able to get a little deeper into the game to Gordon Graceffo. That's coming in just a moment.
Another player that played at West Virginia. Next pitch to him is hit high and deep to right field. He got it. It's gone and it's over the bleachers. A home run for Victor Scott, his first of the season. And the Cardinals have had two solo big flies in the early going. It's 2-0 St. Louis.
Into the Allegheny with that baseball off the bat of Victor Scott II as the Cardinals get the win 11-7. They also had a home run out of Nolan Gorman in that ball game. Three RBIs apiece for Gorman and Walker and Burley. Cardinals all over the Pirates. They were up 6-0 early, 11-3 at one point. They win the game 11-7. Bernie, it was Kyle Leahy making the start, and he comes out firing. He strikes out the side in the first inning. He didn't walk anyone and struck out 7, 82 pitches, 54 strikes for Leahy in 5 1/3. What'd you think?
Clearly the best that he's looked. And listen, the Pirates offense is not the Pirates offense that we've seen in years past. They have some horsepower. So I you know, he was using so many different pitches and they were all sharp, all with movement. I think Pajes called a great game. You know, they were setting the Pirates up really well, but you still got, if you're the pitcher, you got to execute the pitches, and they did that. It was really, really good. And it was pretty much five outstanding innings. And then, you know, Ollie Marmol did when he explained it after the game, because I thought, okay, five's good enough. He's probably going to be vulnerable now. And the answer to that, as I found, was, yeah, He was vulnerable, but that's why Ollie wanted to send him out, because Leahy is going to have to get to the point where he physically feels comfortable, and he is comfortable when he can pitch more than five innings, when he can put six innings in the books, because Ollie pointed out, you know, in terms of all major league starting pitchers, the third time through the lineup, their statistics, the hitting statistics against them just spike. They go way up. So this was this is what Ollie did with Kyle Leahy last night. You know, he had a big lead. He had a cushion. This was time to try to stretch him out, because he has to be stretched out. So why not do it in that game last night? I totally understood what the manager was trying to do there.
Yeah, I know they would like to get more length out of their starters. They've not been terrible in that regard this year. I mean, they're right smack dab in the middle in baseball in terms of getting innings from their starting pitching. So it's not like they've been great. They haven't been awful at it either. I would like to see more innings, because I think that bullpen, especially because there have only been a couple of guys they can really count on every night. So you've got some other guys who are just throwing probably way too much. If you can take some pressure off them, which then would take some pressure off O'Brien and the back end guys, then I think that would pay some dividends throughout the year. But, I mean, just looking at a big picture, they haven't been awful in terms of starting pitching innings this year. But I think for this team, they probably need to get a whole lot more. And even the relief pitching hasn't been, I think there's something like a top 11 or 12 in relief innings thrown this season. So it's not like, you know, it's more than you would like to see, but it's still not awful. They've got to get more length out of their starters, though.
Yeah, Bernie, I almost wonder if not that they don't want to get length out of their starters, but if they had this plan to sort of ease them along here, like they're not in this mode of pushing it too far, and they value this bridge reliever, which for the moment is Gordon Graceffo, who has a minuscule ERA of 1.13, I believe, last time I saw. He's given up two earned runs in 16 innings. I mean, it's pretty good.
It is, and the thing of it is, baseball, as we all know, has changed so dramatically. So, I mean, I definitely get the belly aching because, you know, nowadays if a pitcher gets six innings, you know, somebody pitches six innings, he should be renamed Cy Young. You know, he's like a baseball hero. I understand where people have disdain for that, but I don't know what to say. This is what it is today, and it's not going to change. But it's a real thing. This is why managers, including Ollie Marmol, get a little nervous inside, you know, when they see that third turn of the lineup coming up and their starting pitcher is still in the game. First time this is just a simple step, but as I read these numbers, take note of the escalation. Starting pitchers this year, first time through the lineup, ERA 3.32. Second time through the lineup, 4.28. Third time through the lineup, 5.47. I mean, yeah, their stomachs get a little queasy when they got a starter who isn't like a dominant, you know, Tarek Skubal type guy ready to take on a lineup for the third time in a game.
You have Andre Pallante, who has done the following in terms of innings pitched per start: 5, 5, 5, 5, 5 1/3. So he's consistent at least.
you know you're going to get 5.
We're going to get, so you're going to see 5 out of Pallante tonight, Bernie, and then go from there.
And you know what? From a fifth starter, typically, that ain't bad. You know?
No, just in isolation,
it's not terrible.
I think he's been, I had low expectations, candidly, and I think he's been fine. There's just certain things you know, although Friday night he struck out eight, but you know, with Pallante, the ball's going to be in play a lot. And in a good way, he's going to get a lot of ground balls. And if he just has good command and he can get the pitch to go where he wants it to go, you know, he can have solid starts. But it's just a question of how often he's going to be able to maintain that consistency. Because when the ball's in play, sometimes it goes to places where your fielders aren't. By the way, take a look at him tonight. For what we were talking about, Pallante this year, he has faced 24 batters in terms of the third time through a lineup, and he's got a 6.75 ERA. So, you know, that's something to watch. All of their starters have highly inflated ERAs the third time through the lineup. The only guy that has done pretty well is Dustin May. The other guys have had a big issue with that. So it's just something to watch tonight.
Are you excited about tomorrow morning with an 11:35 start, first pitch for Paul Skeens, and Hunter Dobbins takes the ball on the other side for either of you?
Oh, yeah. I want to see Dobbins. Simple as that. Well, I want to see Skeens, too. But this is more about Dobbins, the new Cardinal, and what he could possibly mean for this rotation.
Yeah, I'm obviously, you're going to get a look at somebody who potentially could be part of their future moving forward. And it's, I hope he is. And I know we're all excited about it because that's what this season, as far as the Cardinals are concerned, is all about. It's about, you know, getting a better look at your inventory. And I know it's probably not the best way to refer to players, but that's kind of what it is. You know, you're looking to see what you've got in house so you know what you can do moving forward. So this is the beginning of that. Can't wait to see it.
Yeah. And last year, if you're curious, Dobbins' numbers before he got hurt and he tore his ACL fielding his position. And the ACL has been the issue, never his arm, shoulder, or anything like that. It's just been getting, obviously, his knee back in order.
Yep.
But last year, he was 4-1 with a 4.13 ERA. He made 11 starts. The thing that jumps out to me is that strikeout-to-walk ratio. I like that. 45 strikeouts and 17 walks in 61 innings for Hunter Dobbins.
Because they need more swing and miss. We talked about that a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I just... It's always cool when you know, when a team's got a need, an obvious need, and you've been waiting on some guy just to, you know, for his knee to excuse me, for his knee to heal up and then him to get his rehab assignment in and all that. So there's been a lot of anticipation because the rotation is, it is what it is. It's like the starting pitchers themselves really can't help it. They're not going to wake up their next time out, and from now on, all of them are going to be striking out like 10 guys a game. There's limitations. So what I'm looking for, and I'm not saying the one start is going to define him. The one start will give us a preview and see where he goes from there. But what I'm intrigued by is that I know that the Cardinals really wanted him, and it wasn't just Heim Bloom. It was also Rob Serfolio. It was the pitching coordinator, Matt Pierpont. They really wanted him. And one of the reasons they wanted him is they saw some things that they believe they could adjust that would make him a more formidable starting pitcher. So that's what's so cool about this. This gives us a chance to see not only the guy just pitch, but is there some evidence that this very smart Cardinals front office did some things, adjusted some things, recommended some things that will make him a guy that might strike out more hitters or just have better stuff?
His first start last season was against the Cardinals. He went 5 innings. He allowed 2 runs on 8 hits. He walked 2. He struck out 5. He got the win. That was the game at Fenway where Miles Michaelis got absolutely annihilated on April 6th. And Red Sox fans were really excited to see Hunter Dobbins on that day. And he came through for him, got the win in that one. We're going to take a timeout. And when we come back, we're going to talk not only about the Red Sox, but also the Mets, the Phillies. It's kind of a mess among some of these teams in Major League Baseball. We'll kind of sort out where the Cardinals are in all of this. And we'll look ahead at once again to the series, not only with the Pirates the next two, but the Dodgers coming up this weekend. We do want to talk a little Kentucky Derby. This is my chance to talk to Bernie and Chris, for that matter, about the Derby. So that's happening on Saturday.
Bernie Nicklaus on KMOX is sponsored by Stewart's American Mortgage, home of the Bagel Loan. And by Celica Heating and Cooling, a Daikin Comfort dealer.
The Gas House Gang on KMOX on a Wednesday. It's great to be with Chris Ranji and Bernie Miklas, producers Matt Pajeski and Frank Ladd. We've got a beautiful day. It's a little cool right behind us in downtown St. Louis. And look who's coming in town this weekend. The Los Angeles Dodgers for 3. Then the Brewers for 3. The month of May. Now, I felt like we said or heard this from people at the start of the season. Like, oh, I don't know. Cardinals are going to, it's going to be tough to start. They're going to play the Rays and the Mets are going to be really good and the Red Sox and all this stuff. They ended up losing 2 out of 3 to the Red Sox. But I guess the point is, Bernie, you never really know about some of these teams. You know about the Dodgers. That's going to be a tough one to get through. But just quickly, here's who they have. It on paper, it sounds like a challenging May, quite honestly. Dodgers for 3, Brewers for 3 at home. At the Padres, at the A's. At home against Kansas City and Pittsburgh. At Cincinnati, at Milwaukee, at home against the Cubs. I mean, they'll be challenged. Lots of NL Central in there. Should be a fun month. See what they got.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. And a lot of it depends, obviously, like how teams are playing in, you know, all their different areas at the time that you see them. But I think the Cardinals have proven already that they compete. They play in a lot of really close games. My point is that a lot of these series the Cardinals are going to play are just a lot like the series that we've seen for the most part so far. You know, probably will come down to the third game, or they're going to be 3-game series where there's a lot of 2-1s, and you want to be on the 2, not the 1. So, but the Cardinals can hang with anybody, and I certainly don't think that they're going to be intimidated by the Dodgers or anyone else. Like you said earlier, Tom, I think they love the challenge. And you were talking about some of the teams that were underachieving, to put it mildly. My gosh, I've been getting on everyone's nerves for the last 3, 4, 5 years by making the point, money can really help you a lot. If your payroll's huge, that can be a plus, but not if your front office makes a bunch of idiotic decisions. You know, it can actually bring you down. And there's a lot of that going on in Major League Baseball this year, you know, and it's just staggering. Like the Mets, for example, if you add in the tax bill, like the money's, they have to pay extra based on going over the salary cap a couple times. Like what they're going to have to pay this year, $508 million. That's basically their true payroll, if you include the tax. $508 million, right? The Phillies, $330 million. Toronto, $311 million. The Dodgers are up over $500 million, but at least they win. So that it doesn't matter what they spend, they win because they know how to put everything else with the team together. It's not just spending on talent.
No, it isn't. You have to spend. Okay. I don't want to say that you absolutely have to spend, but you have to be willing to spend. Let me put it that way. Yeah. I think teams, when they, to their detriment, a team like Tampa Bay or historically in the past, what the Pirates have done, where, you know, they got a good young core and they just refuse to do anything to help that core out. And they just kind of say, well, you know, you're here, so go win for us and we're not going to get you any help. That's not a way to do it either. So I like that the Mets are willing to go over the top. It's just they got to get smarter about how they spend that money. And we talk about the Dodgers coming to town Friday. That team knows how to spend, and they know how to develop, and they know how to draft. They know how to do everything. They do just about everything right. It is absolutely the model franchise, and not everybody can do what they do because not every team can spend the amount of money they can spend, but they spend it wisely. Every now and then they'll have a contract that just sort of, you know, they probably wish they had back, but they can spend to correct that contract too. However, they just do all the little stuff right as well.
Yes, and you can't be in the middle in really in any sport, to be honest, and that's where the Cardinals were stuck. And yes, the Cardinals kept trying to patch and thought they could maybe appease the fans by adding this and this. And I look, there were some times, I'm not going to be fake. I mean, when they got Nolan Arenado, I'm like, let's go. I mean, yeah, they got the guy.
And Goldschmidt.
They got Goldschmidt. There isn't a better first base, third base. I remember saying those words. There isn't a better corner infield combo in the game right now than what the Cardinals have. They are going for it. And they bring in Pujols and he catches fire and you thought, my goodness, they might do this. Well, the truth was, you know, their rotation, they started that series against the Phillies with Quintana, admirable. They went for it there too, but they didn't have, as it turned out, the right combination of players for the following year either. It just started to slowly deteriorate. And Bernie, that's the thing. You cannot just, and I'll put the Blues in that category too. The Blues would be wrong to start to add a high priced player or two and trade away some coveted young players. They need to stick with the plan as the Cardinals are doing right now.
Yeah, I totally agree. And it requires some patience, but the way, you know, my position on that is that from 1996 through, you know, 2022, the Cardinals were as good as anybody in baseball. Yeah, there were a couple franchises that won more postseason games, but we're talking about kind of like a dead heat in many respects. The Cardinals were as good as anybody. Over 27 years, if you add up the 27-year record, it's just amazing. So I've developed at least a little perspective in my old age at knowing that any fan base in any sport, when you basically for like just under three decades, you're pretty dominant, it's not going to last forever. There's going to be mistakes made. You're going to get a little, maybe you'll be complacent. Maybe you let something slide, like the Cardinals let their player development and farm system slide. And then all of a sudden you wake up and it's kind of like, what happened? You know? So I've studied this so many times. I've looked at all of the great baseball teams that had these long-term stretches of excellent success. But every single one of them then had a downturn in some cases that was a lot longer than people remember. And so I understand why this is tough to take locally. I really do. But I also think it probably helps to remember that every franchise that's had success goes through this, you know? So this is our turn now. And at least Bill DeWitt hired the right guy, and they're improving all of the infrastructure and all the things that kind of collapsed on them. And there's some stuff to really look forward to. But it's okay. If it works the way we all think it's going to work, they're going to be back and running, and the winning will resume, and that's when Bill DeWitt will have to step up and increase that payroll and at least get it to where the Cardinals were in the years they – when they won the World Series those two times, they were ranked 11th in payroll. I mean, the Cardinals can approach being – not maybe being in the top 10 because they are mid-market despite what people claim they are. I think they need to get closer to that top 10. You know, you can be ranked 12th in payroll, 13th in payroll, whatever, and still have a lot of money to work with as long as your farm system is kicking prospects up to you all the time.
Yeah, you can't have a full lineup of free agents. It just – that just doesn't work. It doesn't work for the Dodgers even. It won't work for the Mets. It won't work for any of the higher market teams. But it is about their willingness to, when they've put together a good core that they believe in, and they believe, all right, now this is the time. This is the time to strike now. They have to be willing to do it then. And yeah, you're right, Bernie. Every team has some kind of downturn after years of extended success. I keep thinking, like, you know, when will it be their turn again to go back to having a lineup with like a Walker and an Albert and a Roland and Jim Edmonds? You know what I mean? Like, you got four guys who are 1,000 OPS or 900 or whatever it was, and just an absolute murderer's row of a lineup. And you wonder, when's that going to happen again? Does that happen anytime soon? Is that a one-off? I mean, what will we ever see it again here?
My answer is, when is that going to happen again? My answer is never.
Yeah. I mean, probably not. Not in St. Louis.
No, that's not. Yeah.
There's only one Albert Pujols. So that's where it ends right there. You'll never be able to put together a lineup that is led by Albert Pujols.
Yeah.
In his prime. Never.
Just an incredible turn of events where you drafted a guy in the 13th round, developed him. He came out as an absolute force in 2001 and never looked back. If not for Barry Bonds, he wins way more MVPs.
Oh, yeah.
It's incredible what he was able to accomplish.
Ronge, I was being a smart aleck. I apologize. No. To your point,
to have a murderer's role.
To your point, though.
Yeah.
To your point, though. Yeah, they're going to need to make some really serious upgrades. Well, everywhere, but since you were talking offense, they're going to have to add established major league talent that can really take their offense from like a pretty good level to a great level. And you can have a great offense even if you don't have Albert Pujols in his prime. But I had to give you a hard time.
Well, that's what I'm here for. I'm here for this.
Cardinals fans slowly but surely are trusting the plan from Chaim Bloom. I'll say this about Chaim. He didn't say this. I'm just going to say it as an observer. I'm happy for him that he has a club that he can shape without ownership looking over his shoulder or having a different direction. And boy, that Boston team is horrendous. I mean, that is a bad baseball team in a terrible situation with fans that are up in arms about it.
You know, John Henry has been a great owner of the Red Sox because they've won how many World Series? 2004, 2008, 2013, 2018. That's great. It really is. So that must be acknowledged. But he's kind of gone off the deep end here for a while. But since he's been – I looked this up today. Since he's owned the team, they've had seven primary baseball leaders, like in the front office. Seven. And they've also had a couple interims that hung around a while. And so in terms of managers, they've had – if we count Alex Cora twice, I mean, they've had six or seven managers during that time. And I was laughing when they – sacked Alex Cora because, you know, Alex Cora, I'll be straight and put it on the table. Alex Cora absolutely undermined Chaim Bloom when Chaim Bloom was a young chief baseball officer of the Red Sox. He undermined him. And so it was Chaim Bloom's turn. They all decided, well, we got to get rid of this guy. So it's not us who's the problem. It's him, you know. That's all they do in that front office now. And the managers have been part of that, part of the backstabbing. Chaim Bloom has got to be one of the happiest people in baseball that he works for a stable organization and he works closely with the manager where there is total alignment and philosophy and many other things where they can have frank discussions and debates and come up with plans that at the end of the day they all agree to. He is a very happy man, Mr. Heim Bloom.
It is a good situation to be in for sure. The Cardinals and the Pirates coming up. Coming up in the next segment, we will do our Budweiser toast, and it is a person that I actually spent a great time with in the 2013 World Series against Boston. I'll just put that out there, and we'll go from there.
Bernie Miklas on KMOX is sponsored by Stewart's American Mortgage, home of the bagel loan, and by Celica Heating and Cooling, a Daikin Comfort dealer.
Wouldn't I love to see number 25 off of Albert's bat go into the street, the pit. Swing and hello, 4th of July. Take a ride on that knockdown pitch, big boy. Kerry Wood knocked him down, and now Albert looks at him as he goes around first. He gives him a glare. Say, take a little whiff of that, big boy. And now Kerry Wood takes a look at Albert as he touches them all. Give it to him, big boy. Give it to him.
Oh, my all-time favorite Mike Shannon call. July 4th, 2003. What a great moment that was. Thank you, Matt Pajeski, for that. Budweiser Toast, presented by Budweiser. For 150 years, this Bud's for you. I should have done it sooner. Mike Shannon is the Budweiser Toast. So we've had some good ones. Katie Wu was the OG.
Then that's right.
Dan Reardon. And
Katie's then, back in town this weekend, or will be.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah,
good
Dodgers
point.
Dodgers are here.
David Freese was yesterday. Well, today it's Mike Shannon. This Bud's for you, Mike Shannon. We miss you. We love you so much. And look at that, the Mike Shannon book in the hand of Bernie Miklas as we crack open ice cold Budweisers here in the studio. And I love Mike Shannon. I mentioned the 2013 World Series. It was so special to be with him. Dinner before game one, being in the booth, watching him work. Just a in the Fall Classic, and just a classic broadcaster, and he is so good to all of us. The other thing that I think about Bernie this time of year is the Kentucky Derby. I always think of Mike Shannon. He always had a pick. He always had a thought. I went down to the Florida Derby one time after spring training, and he said, I need to know about this guy, this horse. He wanted to know my report. He loved the Kentucky Derby.
You haven't lived till you go to a racetrack with Mike Shannon, and Derby Day was always an adventure. When he couldn't go to the race because of maybe he had the Cardinals game or whatever, he would bunker in at Fairmount Park. And you know, the thing that was really the great thing about Mike Shannon on Derby Day is that he would actually be calling the jockey's room at Churchill Downs. Because he knew all the big time jockeys, and he could get them on the phone, and I'd be sitting there and listen to these conversations. You know, he's talking to Gary Stevens or Pat Day or something. He's like, "Well, big boy, you know how's that big colt looking? You know, what do you got, big boy? You know, and trying to get some insight from them. He's talking to the jockeys, like." Even though he's in St. Louis. I mean, that right there is everything you need to know about Mike Shannon, about how he operates and what a colorful, great character he was.
Absolutely well said. When I grow up, I want to be Mike Shannon. That's for sure. Man, just an incredible part of Cardinal history. So cheers to Mike. And, you know, Bernie, I was going to do a Kentucky Derby pick on the show, but I really thought about it. It's still too early. It's Wednesday. There's already been a scratch. We need more information. We got to wait.
Silent Tactics is out.
I like Commandment. I'll just throw that out there. I like Commandment, the six horse.
For Bernie Miklas, for Chris Ranji, for Matt Pajeski, I'm Tom Ackerman. Thank you for joining us on the Gas House Gang. No show tomorrow because we have an early Cardinals game, 11:35 first pitch, 10:40 pregame. I'll be on that. Cardinals and Pirates. We look forward to it. Thanks for being with us on KMOX. The DGS is next.